They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Hello, welcome. Come in, grab some chair, get your popcorn ready, because you're kicking it with Magellan's at the Movies. I'm your co-host, Elliot Moglianes. I'm joined in perpetuity by my co-host, Nathan Moglianes, who's laughing for some reason.
In perpetuity.
Nathan, say hello.
Hey, in perpetuity just makes, that's kind of funny. That's a funny way to describe our working relationship.
Okay, well, valuable contributions as ever from Nathan. Anyway, so I'd like to start this off by talking about a film 28 years later. It is out right now in theaters, so you can go and watch it if you want to. I did want to, and I watched it, like, a couple hours ago. So this is the follow-up to the 28 days later, 28 weeks later, the 28 franchise.
Yeah.
It's been getting really strong reviews. Reactions that I've seen from audiences have also been positive, but there's been a lot of like, whoa, this is not what I was expecting. And I can second that. This is not what I was expecting either. The kind of movie that you're in for. I'm not gonna spoil anything. But the kind of movie that you're in for, I think. Well, I'll say it like this. From the trailers that I've seen the first two trailers, and all of that footage comes from the first like 30 minutes of the movie. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff. It's just the movie is taking a different tact than I think a lot of people are going to expect, but it worked for me. It worked for me a lot. I thought this movie was very good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. There were some issues that I had that it's not even remotely possible to explain without spoiling it, but it looks beautiful, beautifully filmed movie, which, yeah, I just don't associate Danny Boyle with beautifully filmed movies. I mean, I think he makes good movies, don't get me wrong, but he's always worked in grit and grime, and there is plenty of that in this movie, but the way it's filmed and the setting in which it takes place, it's quite lush at times, often even. So yeah, I thought it was really good. If you like zombie movies, I think that you could probably see this without watching the first two, because it gives you a recap and everything, and it's not that tied into the anything that particular that happens in the first two movies. If, however, you have seen the first two and like them, I think you'll be satisfied with this one as well. It's definitely one of the better zombie movies I've seen in a long time.
Wow.
So, and I'm excited for the next one.
Dang. That's what a glowing review. Maybe I'll have to get around to seeing that.
Have you seen the first two?
Nope. But you just said I didn't have to.
I know. I was just curious.
Yeah. So Elliot, the other banter piece that we're going to be talking about today is IndieWire put on a list. They decided it was far enough into 2025 to put out a list of the top 100 best movies of the 2020 so far. Elliot, I sent you this list earlier in the week. I think, you know, we don't have to talk. I think the most baffling additions, I don't want to talk about every thing on this list. Obviously, Megalopolis at 100. That's insane. I also like that the first line of their write-up says, as personal and egoless as you could ever hope to expect. Egoless? I did not get the sense from anyone who saw this movie that it was egoless. But
well, I think they're saying that it is as egoless as this kind of movie can be, yeah. Which I disagree. I think that a movie like this can be much, much more egoless than Megalopolis.
Yeah, the other weird inclusion, The Matrix Resurrections, is kind of a bizarre inclusion. For my money, there's a lot to like on this list, or at least a lot of movies that I think are very, very deserving. Asteroid City, one of my favorite movies from the past couple of years, lands very high on the list. Pig is on this list, a fantastic movie, Nicolas Cage movie, very good. Babylon, Damien Chazelle's newest movie, which I am a huge proponent of, defender of. These are all movies, but Elliot, I thought we would zip through the top 10 and kind of get your thoughts. As we're moving through this decade, and as we're, right, movies are a living, breathing art form that we're actively getting new movies and adding movies to the established canon. If you think of movies from the previous decade, like Get Out or Mad Max Fury Road, that have already been, I would say, firmly entrenched into the pantheon of cinematic canon of movies that you have to see. IndieWire here, they're trying to look forward to what movies from the 2020s are going to do this. Let's run through these real quick. Number 10, Decision to Leave, actually a movie that we have reviewed on this podcast. I reviewed it very favorably. Elliot, less favorably, I think.
Yeah, so, that's a disgrace.
Number 9, Drive My Car. Elliot, have you seen Drive My Car?
No.
Okay. I don't think it's worth it. I do not enjoy Drive My Car. It feels like a movie that takes forever to say, nothing of much note or interest. Time, this is a movie I've heard of a lot. This is number 8. Ellie, have you heard of this movie? Are you familiar with this one?
No. Isn't that a magazine?
It is a magazine. That's correct. Chuckle to yourself very funnily. No, it's about a guy who, I believe, was wrongfully imprisoned for a period of time, and it's a documentary about his family and coming out from it or something. It won Best Documentary a couple years ago, or at least was nominated. I've heard about it. It's supposed to be very good. Number 8 for them. Number 7, another movie we reviewed. I was stunned to see this high, Top Gun Maverick. I mean, that's so interesting to me.
That's so high.
It is really high. Number 6, Lover's Rock. I feel like this is kind of splitting hairs, because this is Steve McQueen's, like, miniseries sort of thing that he did for Amazon. And so this is, I would say, technically, like, a short film, more than, like, a film. It's only 68 minutes long. I haven't seen these things, although I do love Steve McQueen. But interesting of them to include this at number 6, I would say.
I was just gonna say, I haven't seen that.
Yeah. Number 5, The Boy and the Heron, Hayao Miyazaki's movie from a couple of years ago. Elliot, did you ever see this one?
No, if I remember correctly, your impression of it wasn't glowing, and that kind of, wasn't super interested in it in the first place, but when you told me about it, I was like, yeah, I'll skip that.
Yeah, I think Miyazaki has made way better movies. It's not a terrible movie. It's an entertaining film, but I don't ever feel like it congeals into something that's as powerful as people seem to think it is, or at least as much as people say. Number 4, Elliot, you'll like this, Tar, Todd Field's movie.
Yes.
Another movie that we have reviewed for the podcast. number four. I think this one has very good odds of being entrenched in the cinematic canon by the time the decade is out. That's my sense.
And we were there. We were there at the beginning.
Right? Yep. We watched it. We reviewed it. We put our vote out there. Number three, Elliot, I know you haven't seen this, After Sun.
Oh, yeah.
Personally, I think that's really high. I would put After Sun in maybe like the 60 to 70 sort of range. It's a great movie, but it is kind of a somewhat one-note movie, which isn't always a bad thing. Sometimes one-note movies are very interesting, but anyway. Number two, Elliot, you'll love this. The Zone of Interest. I think this movie has...
Absolutely.
I mean, this one pretty much has the pretentious film. This one's locked. It's locked up its place in the cinematic canon. There's no way it's not going to be considered one of the greatest, like 100 greatest films of all time by the time the decade is out. That's, in my opinion, that's what the sense I get from seeing people talk about it.
I would have to agree. I think they're right.
And number one, interesting choice at number one, I thought, was Nickel Boys.
Yeah. I like that movie, but dang, that's a pick.
Yeah, I like it too. I would probably put it on my top 100 of the decade thus far. But
the decade.
Of the decade. I would probably put it in a similar place as After Sun for I think it's an ingenious movie. I feel kind of similar about it as I do to Zone of Interest, that like it's definitely an ingenious way of constructing a film and constructing a story with a very clear intention behind it. It just doesn't grab me in the way that it grabs a lot of other people.
Yeah, I don't know. I probably, well, I don't know. Maybe I'd put it on my top 100 just to fill out the list. I'm not 100% sure. I've seen 100 movies from the 2020s.
Surely you have.
I don't know. But yeah, I thought that it was broadly enjoyable. Some great acting. I felt like it didn't really go the kind of places I feel like you could go with its filming technique. The idea of filming stuff from first person. Also, Enter the Void is filmed in first person. That's the worst movie, I don't know, I guess ever.
Wow.
But so that kind of scared me off, put me off first person movies entirely.
Dang.
But yeah, also I clocked the twist by like, I don't know, the second time the mechanism by which the twist would be introduced or would be revealed, the second time it was introduced, I was like, okay, I understand what's happening here.
Wow.
Even though the movie tries to cheat, but even then I was like, no, I think you're lying to me, movie, and it ended up that it was pretty much lying to me, which I don't appreciate. I don't like it when movies make twists by lying to you.
We feel differently about this movie, but we don't have to get into it. maybe when the decade's out and we finally get to do our top 10 movie, where we have to put together our top 10 of the decade list, maybe it'll come up again. I doubt it, though.
That was the interesting thing, was reading this list. I know we're really going on here, but different people were doing the different write-ups. And so having been on a journey of ranking top 10 films from the decades,
yeah,
I could kind of imagine the conversations that were going on behind the scenes, the voting, the democracy, the democratic element.
Well, I don't know if they wrote new write-ups for them, because I'm pretty sure their write-up for Oppenheimer was just their review for Oppenheimer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I've seen that stupid opening where they were like, if Oppenheimer didn't exist, Nolan would have invented him, because it's like the type of person that Nolan makes all of his movies about. I'm like, that's not true. Like, what are you talking about? Also, they put Barbie ahead of Oppenheimer, which is just a that's a crazy...
planting their flag.
Anyway, let's get to the movie that we're actually discussing today. We have received yet another request. The requests are flooding in. If you want to join that flood, you can send us an email. You can let us know. You don't have to send us an email. A lot of people have been like texting us things, but sending us an email is the best way to ensure that your request gets seen and heard. This is from my future sister-in-law. She's currently engaged to my brother-in-law. This request is from Alice. She has requested Big Fish. I was very excited to do this episode because if you cast your mind back to when we did Pee-wee Herman's Big Adventure, I recommended Big Fish for that movie. I said that I had not seen a lot of Tim Burton movies, but I really enjoyed Big Fish. And this is kind of a Father's Day movie, so the timing was very serendipitous. Father's Day was just last Sunday. This is a movie about fathers, in some sense. So it worked out perfectly. Big Fish, if you're not aware, it's based on a book. It follows a son coming home to kind of help his ailing father, and the son's relationship to the father has been somewhat strained over the years by what he sees as the father telling tall tales, that the father will tell stories about his childhood and about his life growing up, and they are stories that seem unbelievable, seem ridiculous, and the son is frustrated by this seeming duplicitousness on the part of the father. Sure, you could say that instead. But the movie kind of follows the story of the father in whimsical flashbacks, as well as the modern day story of the son trying to come to grips with who his father really is. I've seen this movie before. I was excited to rewatch it. I'm just gonna toss it over to Elliot. Here we go. First thoughts. Let's leap towards the review.
I don't see any reason to beat around the bush here. I enjoyed this movie quite a bit.
Let's go.
I would put it in my, as if this is an actual thing that I've spent any time considering, my upper tier of Tim Burton movies.
Wow.
I thought that his style, which of course is very unique, and obviously, especially when we look back at his recent work, his style can really go wrong when it's not applied with tact and discretion. But I think that his style enhances rather than detracts from this movie. I liked Dr. Manhattan, Obi-Wan Kenobi. They were doing a great job. That French woman from Inception, Marion
Cotillard?
I think you've got the L's in the wrong place there, but yes.
No.
Everyone does a great job in their performances. It didn't like blow me away or anything. I wasn't weeping by the end of it. And to be honest, I feel like the ending is probably its shakiest part.
Interesting.
But on the whole, I thought it was entertaining, occasionally moving, at least in some measure, and of course, lots of fun in the fantastical moments when Burton is really letting his sensibilities out into the onto the frame. So thought it was really good. I enjoyed it.
Nice. I feel like we've had a run of movies that we disagreed on or that we found ourselves in different places on. So this is great that we can talk very positively about a movie at the same time. I love when that happens. I would agree. This is my second time watching the movie. I think I liked it a little more than I did the first time, honestly. I found it very moving. Maybe I'm just a baby. I did cry at the end. I think the ending is really great, but I think the movie as a whole is really fantastic. I think it's a really creative premise for a movie, and I don't know. I guess I would want to start the review in this place, because it's, for me, Elliot, a part of the joy of this movie is how much I sort of see my own father in the movie. Not in the sense that I have a strained... Not in the sense that I have a strained relationship with my father, but in the sense that our father... I'll stop saying mine as if it's not also yours. But our father is a person who loves to tell stories. He's a very social person. And so I just think the final idea of the movie, that a person telling a story, regardless of necessarily the truth of the story, communicates something about the person telling the story. And I just think that's so neat. It just connects with me on a level where that final scene at the funeral, when they're all telling stories about Edward Bloom, I don't know, it just really gets me. It makes me think about my own father's eventual funeral, and it kind of, you know, it just kind of connects with me a little bit on that sense. But right when I started this, I see that it did not have a similar effect to you.
No, I didn't think about Dad once during this movie.
Wow. Interesting.
I don't know. There's not much else I could say. I just didn't think about that. Dad's very gregarious person, like you said. Very personable.
Yeah.
Just a likable guy, in my opinion. But Dad likes telling true stories, as far as I know. the hint of, I don't know, I feel like Dad's less of a showboat than Edward Bloom.
I don't know about that. The man loves to talk, Elliot.
That's true, but he didn't hijack your wedding night to tell a story about himself.
We did give him a mic to talk, and I guess he never talked about himself. But he did tell a story, so he kind of did it. Anyway, maybe let's start talking more substantively here about the movie. Let's start with the Tim Burton heavy aspect of the movie, the parts of the movie that are these flashbacks with Ewan McGregor portraying Edward Bloom as he goes on these fantastic sort of adventures. What did you think of these sections of the movie?
They were very enjoyable. Very fun to watch because there's plenty of variety. They don't really feel the same, which I think is always a threat when you're doing a lot of vignettes to keep from repeating yourself, even stylistically repeating yourself. But no, he's in the army in Vietnam working as a circus guy, in all kinds of, a performer and just like a general maintenance worker, wooing a woman. Yeah, I just thought that I was always excited to see where the next one would be set, how it would all play out, what kinds of fun and quirky, almost Coen Brothers-y characters we would meet, because quirk is the defining characteristic for pretty much all of these characters, the ones that he meets in his possibly true, possibly not true stories. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I thought that the Viet Cong live entertainment, I thought that was really funny. The guy doing the dummy, and everyone's just joylessly looking on. Same thing when the Siamese twins are doing their routine. Oh man, I thought that was funny. That got me chuckling.
No, I think these vignettes are really funny. The sequence in Spectre when he's hanging out with Steve Buscemi's poet character.
Oh,
yeah. He shows him his work in progress and it's like three lines and it's terrible. And Buscemi's like, this is why you never show people work in progress. And then when he's doing a bunch of women are around him and he's doing, you know, violets or roses are red, violets are blue. And then he stops and then he's like, I gotta go on the dance floor or something. No, they're very funny. I thought, which again, casting your mind back to the Pee Wee Herman's Big Adventure episode, I didn't find big chunks of that movie particularly funny. So I think Tim Burton really nailed it with the humor with these sections. And yeah, like you mentioned as well, it was always fun to go back and see what new ridiculous sort of thing would happen to the character. I think like Danny DeVito's circus, the ringmaster turning out to be a werewolf, that's quirky and fun, and the town of Spectre, his adventures in the army, and then even his brief stint as a bank robber. It was always a fun time to see what hijinks he would be up to.
Yeah, it's always very dynamic, very diverse, and that kind of constant shifting in terms of setting and aesthetic sometimes really kept the energy up. So even though some of these vignettes are pretty long, I felt like the pace was always pretty snappy, especially since, I mean, it's a bit of a ADHD kind of paradise in just how much there is to look at. And before you can even come close to taking in all of the set design and the costumes and the extras and stuff, we're on to the next elaborate set with lots of extras and lots of cute or interesting, like, period piece costumes.
Yeah. I think then the other big piece of this movie is the sections with Billy Crudup. Yes, Dr. Manhattan. I completely forgot that he played Dr. Manhattan. You're so right. But him kind of trying to work out his issues with his father. And this was another section that I found, I thought was really fantastic. And I think it is a very common feeling as an adult coming to terms with the way your parents decided to raise you and the types of people that your parents decided to be. Because when you're a kid, and kind of like William talks about, right, that when he was a kid, he thought his dad was awesome and he thought all these stories were so true and amazing. And then as he grew older, he was like, this is ridiculous and this is silly and I don't like the way that you're going about doing this. And I think that's a fairly universal experience. I think all of us have things that we wish our parents would have done differently, and coming to terms with, like, okay, they were adults and hopefully they were trying to do the best they could, and so having to accept some of these rougher parts of the people that you're kind of stuck with, I found very compelling and very well done. This is where you say, I don't know about all that.
I don't know about all that.
Oh, no way.
This part of the movie, these are kind of braided storylines. You've got young Edward Bloom branching out, finding himself, making a name for himself, and then you've got old Edward Bloom dying while Dr. Manhattan tries to connect with him or make peace with him. And the section in the present is not bad by any means, but I was less invested in it as it went on, because my impression of the nature of this rift that existed between them turned out to be, well, at the beginning of the movie, when Edward tells this story on the day of William's wedding, William is upset that it's not true, but also he says, like, this is the one time when the universe is not supposed to be revolving around you. And that element of, or the specter of selfishness to the specter of the showboaty nature that I was talking about never really comes up again, which I think is kind of a shame, because it contributes to at least my sense that this ending is very tidy, a little bit too tidy for my tastes, to be honest. Just because, I don't know, again, it's not bad. It's just at the 11th hour, William tells his dad a fantastical, bombastic story, and then they're perfectly at peace. And William goes on and he spreads his father's stories to his own child. And I was like, oh, that, yeah, I mean, that's fine. And that's like, that's the Hollywood ending. But I feel like there was room and even a little bit of setup for something that operated a little bit more realistically. And like, you could have found a way to make it so that he comes to peace with his father without basically, without coming to the conclusion that there was never a problem in the first place. Because that's something that I never appreciate when movies or any kind of story does, when a character who who is presented to us as flawed, and then the conclusion is, well, there was no flaw in the first place, that it was all fine. That's so much less interesting to me than finding the equilibrium, the peace in those flaws, rather than just kind of doing a bit of a hand wave and saying like, oh, well, it's fine now.
That's interesting, because I don't really get the sense that the movie is saying his flaws weren't important. I don't think the movie is saying that Edward didn't do anything wrong, or the way he went about things was the best and optimal sort of way. I saw it as more that William was coming to the conclusion that the flaws weren't the most important thing, and that it was maybe wrong of him to be treating them as the most important thing. That, like, his issues with with the way his father told stories, and his issues with the stories themselves, got in the way of him seeing all the ways that his father was trying to share himself with his son. That, like, in the opening, in that scene where his dad is, you know, doing the, kind of stealing the show at the wedding, after William leaves, his dad does end with, like, a message to William and a statement about, that is pertinent to the wedding and to marriage in general, that he's talking about, like, you know, I wouldn't trade anything for the person I, for this marriage, the woman that I found, and I hope you feel the same way. And so I kind of more got the sense that William was finally able to look past the things that bugged him about the stories, that being right there blatantly false aspects, to see what he could actually learn about his father in those stories. And I agree with you that, like, it is a fairly Hollywood ending, but I don't think it's that unrealistic. And I think that sequence where William goes and hears about his dad helping out this town and doing all this stuff for Jenny and Spectre, I feel like that really changed his perspective in a way that allowed him to kind of meet his father where he was at, as opposed to continuing to insist that his father had to change to meet William where he's at, which I agree is, I think all of us should work to compromise with the people who are important to us and meet them as close as possible to where they're trying to be. But I also think that destroying your own, as right, not in every case, this isn't a universal truth, but I think in the case of this movie, William was right for accepting his father, flaws and all, and saying, okay, I'm gonna do this in the way that you're doing this because I'm seeing a little bit of the positive about it. So I didn't really get that sense, that same sense.
So in other words, the flaws don't really matter all that much, and we're just going to hand wave it.
I guess you could frame it like that if you're trying to be very cynical about it.
That's what the movie's saying. And like, I would have to disagree with the idea that it's a compromise. A compromise involves parties moving towards the center.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a compromise. I'm just saying in some things, being uncompromising in saying you have to compromise on this, as opposed to saying, actually, this isn't a huge deal and I am able to ignore the fact that I would want to do it differently and just do it 100% your way because I've decided it doesn't matter. I think that is a somewhat useful lesson for people to learn.
Right. And what I'm saying is that
you don't feel like that's what the movie's saying.
Well, that's not what the movie's saying. Oh. And I'm saying that disregarding flaws is less interesting to me than facing those flaws head on and then making the compromise within that rather than just like, you know, ignoring that. I said, you know, that's how upset I am.
Dang.
Rather than saying, I know, now Nathan wins. Rather than just saying the flaws don't matter, like disregarding the idea that there is, that all of the problems were William's for not meeting his father where he was at. If that is what the movie was trying to say, then I was not convinced. And I mean, that's a problem, because if the movie doesn't convince you.
Yeah, you're right. I did win the argument because you were the first person to throw in, say, you know.
A filler word.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure I said somewhere in there, so you gotta jump on me when I do that. But yeah. We disagree on the ending a little bit, I guess, then.
Well, but I thought that William was a flawed character. Not William. Edward was a flawed character. And then to learn that, well, those flaws, that actually doesn't really matter. Is just not interesting to me.
Well, I mean, he's dead. What can he do?
Well, they could have done it before he died.
He had a stroke. I mean, no, yeah.
They could have done it before he had a stroke.
I get what you're saying.
Gosh dang it, I liked this movie. You're making me sound like I didn't even like it.
I'm sorry. Sometimes we just like it in different ways, sometimes I'm just a little more pretentious with the ways that I describe how I feel about it. But I did also think that the movie was, and you've kind of touched on this already, but talking about the technical aspects of the movie, I thought the movie looked really good. There was a lot of fun shots with shadows and kind of things with shadows. The shot of Ewan McGregor standing in the field of daffodils, I mean, that's maybe an all-timer Tim Burton shot, in my opinion. I mean, that's gotta be one of his most iconic images. It looks fantastic.
There's a very similar shot in 28 Years Later.
They're cribbing from the master, Elliot. Danny Boyle.
Learned... Come up with your own ideas.
Yeah, wow. But no, I think the movie looks really good. Lots of really fun stuff with Carl the Giant. He's
loved Carl.
Yeah, he's only actually, I mean, he's a very tall gentleman. He's like 7'6" or something like that. But a lot of really fun practical effects shots to make him look bigger than he is, those are always fun to me. If you've ever seen the behind the scenes shots of like the Lord of the Rings and how they got shots of the hobbits and did stuff like that, it's a ton of work for stuff that is like really simple shots, like just people walking down a road becomes way harder when you have to have one of the people look like they're 6 or 7 feet taller than the other person. But it looks fantastic. I don't think there was ever a moment where I was like, wow, that looks terrible. There was a couple of moments where the CGI was a little dodgy. When his car goes underwater, I was like, that doesn't really look like it's underwater, but I get what you're doing.
Should have done it like they did it in Hunt for Red October. Just had the blue smoke.
Yeah, true. Maybe they tried it and it didn't work as well.
Oh, gosh, maybe. I bet it doesn't work as well with things that aren't miniatures. Yeah, I'm a big fan of forced perspective. Like when Carl is sitting on the log and then Edward sort of leans up on the log next to him, I could tell,
yeah.
Not because the effect was bad, but just because having seen Lord of the Rings like 30 times, I know when to or how to look for this kind of thing. You could tell that he was a lot further down the log than it appeared.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really like that. That's classic movie magic to me.
Yeah.
And Carl was a great character. I love the gentle giant archetype, and this guy did it really well. And I was sad when there wasn't more of him in the movie.
Mm.
But then I liked all of the fun side characters that Edward meets, like the ringmaster, who's also a werewolf.
Yeah.
The Siamese twins, the poet. They're all great.
Yeah, I love the poet. Steve Buscemi, when he shows up at the end, Steve Buscemi is just absolutely in his zone every time he's playing a hapless criminal. That's the peak Buscemi is when he's kind of like floundering around in a bank or something like that. He just incredible, incredible. Every time I see it, I'm like, yes, Buscemi robbing something.
That's true.
It's amazing. I thought he was going to say, I rob banks, and then like pull on a mask. I forgot that he just said, I'm robbing this place.
That was a great turn.
Yeah.
And he was like, he's like, what are you doing these days? And he's like, why are you here? He's like, I'm going to rob this place. That was great. I'm glad that it didn't turn out like the bank robbery in Hell or High Water. Because that old security guard was pointing his gun. And for a second, I thought, like, is this going to get violent?
Way darker than I thought? Yeah. Well, and that might be the movie's also kind of fun because there's stuff at the end of the movie showing that there's kind of a grain of truth in most of the stories that you had seen. I would imagine Edward aiding and abetting a criminal was not a truthful thing that happened, because I doubt that Texas just kind of like shrugs and gives up if they can't find people.
Well, it was a long time ago. What was the when were these stories set?
Well, I'm pretty sure the war that he was in was Korea, because there's a North Korean flag at one point. And Korea was...
That was in the 50s.
Thank you, Elliot. That's huge. So I would assume most
of the... Oh, you're right. The Korean War. So they weren't Viet Cong. But it's still funny.
I mean, it's still funny. I wasn't going to correct you. What was that? Also, I thought that one guy from his town really got shafted by...
Roy from The Office?
Yeah.
Losing another girl?
Yeah, to Ewan McGregor? This guy doesn't have a chance.
Well, we all know Ewan McGregor likes to steal people's girlfriends.
I'm trying to think of what you're referring to. Are you talking about Fargo?
No, I'm talking about his real life.
Oh, that's so unfortunate. Dang. Why do you have to go and ruin Ewan McGregor? He's so cool.
I'm sorry, Nathan. I thought you knew this.
No, I didn't know this.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead was dating someone else.
Oh, no. He's just like Edward Bloom.
He's not, because Edward Bloom ends up being faithful to his wife and a fish, which is not like Ewan McGregor.
I have one other closing thought for this, and this is just that it's not really pertinent, but in my film criticism class, I was told by the teacher that he used to show the end of this movie at some point in the class. I took the class during COVID, so I kind of got an abbreviated version of the class, but typically he said that he would show the end of Big Fish as an example of like merging fantastical and realistic elements or something like that. And he said back when he used to show this that he would have people in the class who would start crying who like hadn't even seen any of the rest of the movie, that just the final sequence of Dr. Manhattan talking to his dad and telling this story and connecting with him as he dies was enough to get people to start crying.
Okay.
I'm just saying, Elliot, you're wrong for not crying at this movie. It's a movie that makes people cry.
Well, I don't know. I've only ever cried at one movie.
What is it?
Return of the King.
That's a great movie to cry at. But that's crazy.
And that wasn't until I saw it
in theaters,
yeah. Mm. That's the one and only time I've ever cried at something fictional.
That's crazy. I cry at everything. I'd be crying.
You're like Dad.
I am like Dad. I cry at everything. Maybe that's why this movie connected with me, because I was like, that's going to be me with my son. I won't connect with him because I'll tell fantastic stories he won't believe.
Gosh.
All right. Anyway, do you have any other closing thoughts here before we get to ratings?
No, I don't think so. Only to say that the music was acceptable, but not something I would listen to casually. I think that's it.
Okay. Well, I'll go first. I really enjoy this movie. I really liked it. The first time I saw it, I think I enjoyed it even more this time. I mean, I guess I didn't really talk much about my negatives. I do think the pacing isn't perfect in the movie. I think there's some parts where the switching back and forth isn't amazing. And some of the stories are less interesting and fun than the other stories. But those are kind of tiny quibbles, in my opinion. I've really come up on this movie a lot on this second viewing. So honestly, I'm going to give it an 8.9 out of 10.
I mean, good heavens.
I really enjoy it. What can I say?
Gets to me. All right. I liked this movie quite a bit. I thought it was fun and funny and entertaining. The ending is a little too perfect for me. And flawless characters are not as interesting to me as flawed characters. So, but that's just a quibble that I have with the end. Well, I guess it's more than a quibble. What am I even saying? I'm just rambling. I'm terrible at talking. Tim Burton, he's a talented director, and I think that his style suits this story really well. So I'm going to give it a B+.
Nice. All right, well, let's get to some recommendations. I'm going to go in maybe an interesting direction. I'm going to go in kind of a modern fairy tale sort of story. If you're looking for another movie that has this similar sense of the fantastic, that's not like a Disney movie, and so it's kind of a different flavor of a fairy tale story. But I'm going to go with David Fincher's The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. If you have no idea what this movie is, then you're in luck, because I'm about to explain it. It follows Benjamin Button, who is a man that is born aging backwards in time. So he is born as an old, wrinkly baby. And then as he grows up, he looks more and more like an old man until he hits like his 50s and 40s, and then he looks pretty...
Looks like Brad Pitt.
Yeah, he looks like Brad Pitt. He's played by Brad Pitt through the entire sequence. And then as he gets older, he's actually de-aging. So he's turning into like a kid. And then when he dies, he's like a baby. If that sounds goofy, it is. I mean, it's kind of a goofy premise, but kind of like Big Fish. It's a very sincere, heartfelt fairy tale story. It's primarily about Benjamin Button and the love story that he has with Kate Blanchett's character, as well as just a larger story about, I don't know, fate. They talk about a guy who gets struck by lightning a bunch, a couple of times. There's a really great sequence of kind of random occurrences leading to someone meeting someone else. It's a very fun movie. I think it's a very good fairy tale in the same sense as Big Fish, where it has fantastic elements, but there's a very sweet human story at the center of it. So that's going to be my recommendation.
Yeah, I can second that recommendation. I enjoy that movie quite a bit. Yes. Very unusual for Fincher, but the man has range.
So true.
He just chooses to not employ it usually, which is fine, because I like the kind of stuff that Fincher makes.
Yeah.
My recommendation is going to be a repeat, a movie that I've recommended before. I'm sorry, I don't like it either. But I had to recommend, again, the Meyerowitz stories. Meyerowitz?
I don't know, dude.
Whatever. You know what I'm talking about. That movie. I chose this because I think that this is also a movie about children and their relationship with a complicated father figure, in this case their actual father, while also maintaining the sense of just ever so slightly off-kilter whimsy that is really unique to Noah Baumbach's movies. This is definitely more of a mature film than Big Fish, which perhaps that's the reason that it is allowed to play a little bit more in that gray area. It does not have the Hollywood ending. The issues with the father are never resolved. They're worked within and against, and it all turns out into something that's funny and heartwarming, and yeah, probably my favorite Noah Baumbach movie. Maybe Marriage Story. Not sure. But yeah, it's really good, and if you want a complicated father double feature, there you go. Big Fish, the Meyerowitz stories.
Jeez. Then do Empire Strikes Back.
Absolutely. Speaking of the Empire Strikes Back, life is hard and full of disappointments.
Wow. That's great. But thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Alice for the request. If you have a request, be sure to send an email to us. We love honoring requests. We love disparaging the movies that you love. We do. hopefully that doesn't discourage people from requesting things, but I think we've said before that our running rate is if you request a movie and Venmo us $5, we will give your movie a positive review. We're very willing to sell out.
Absolutely.
But anyway, send us an email. We're going to be back next week. We're going to be reviewing another movie. It's going to be really fun, really exciting. Look forward to that. In the meantime, we hope you have a great week.